You're listening to Musings with Mark So. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're doing this. It's a wonderful day here in San Francisco. My name is Mark. Welcome back to my podcast, Musings with Mark So, episode 5. It's been a hot minute. I was enjoying my last few weeks with my nuclear family before my brother got married off, and also with the incredibly, incredibly important conversations, demonstrations, and actions going on right now in our country with the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd's murder. I didn't want to distract in any way whatsoever from people educating themselves and getting access to the resources to help. And so I took a little bit of a break and truthfully wasn't feeling all that inspired with everything going on. But I got back to the city this week and I thought about the commitment that I'd made to the podcast and decided to continue recording. And so we're going to jump right in. We actually have Bedroom Alexa again, which is super exciting. And so Alexa, what is Chick-fil-A?
According to Wikipedia, Chick-fil-A is one of the largest American fast food restaurant chains and the largest whose specialty is chicken sandwiches. Its headquarters is in College Park, Georgia. Chick-fil-A was originally founded as the Dwarf Grill in 1946, changing the name to Dwarf House until rebranding as Chick-fil-A in 1967.
Thank you. Wow, she has not missed a step. And so, yes, we're going to talk about my experiences working at Chick-fil-A, but also working at the Apple Store. And with that, we're going to transition into the episode. Nader manna, jam hengbokhaeseo, na hitorok saranghal su isseotdeon geon. If you're like, what did I just hear? That's a good thing. It's good to try and hear new things every single day. That is Me After You by Paul Kim. It's a Korean ballad. And the thing about Korean ballads is that even if you don't know what they're saying, they still hit you. But the great thing is that we have subtitles. So go watch that music video. It's very, very good. And also in the infamous words of Bong Joon-ho, read the subtitles, you dummy. So yes, I worked at Chick-fil-A. I applied on a dare, similar to, if you remember in the Legally Blonde episode, how I got wrapped up in playing Callahan. This seems to happen to me a lot. So I was driving, it was my senior year of high school, I was driving with some friends to Whole Foods for lunch, and we passed this huge sign, and it said, now hiring Chick-fil-A. I had been aware that this Chick-fil-A was going to open for a while. This was the first Chick-fil-A in the entire Pacific Northwest. So Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, all of Canada, obviously, everyone was waiting on bated breath for the opening of this Chick-fil-A. And not only on bated breath, but also in person, in tents, because people actually waited. Because if you're in the first, 100 in line for a new Chick-fil-A, they give you a gift card that has enough money for 52 sandwiches, so one sandwich every week of a year. It's a ridiculous thing, but you gotta respect it. And so I had been aware of this Chick-fil-A. I now saw that they were hiring, that they were open, and I was like, oh my gosh. My friend turns to me and goes, hey, odds that you apply. I think we did 1 in 5. We both said 3. And so in the sacred rules of odds, I had to apply. And so I apply, I think at that lunch, just on my phone, because it's super simple. And I hear back within like 40 minutes. I'm in my next class period, and I get an email from the owner because they're absolutely bleeding out and they need as much help as they can. And so I go in, and it's sort of my first interview ever, actually, because I've had like prior volunteering experience, but nothing that was like an actual job. So I sit down, and a fun, inconsequential, but I think just brain teaser for y'all to think about. This was my last question of the interview. She asked me, Mark, look around the seating area in the Chick-fil-A restaurant. How do you know whose beverages that you need to be refreshing? And you might be like, Mark, why are you saying beverage instead of drink? And why are you saying refreshing instead of refill? And it's because at Chick-fil-A, they use very specific language, and refreshing someone's beverage is the proper term there. And so I look around, and I'm like, I'm trying to be clever. And so I look and I'm like, oh, well, you know, the sun's coming in. So if it hits the cup a certain way and you anger yourself between, you anger yourself on the other side of the cup and the sun, then you can see it coming through and then you can see how much liquid inside. And then you can, you know, refresh their beverages accordingly. And she goes, no, think about we're in Bellevue, so there's not much sun. I'm like, fair point. You got me there. And so she told me the real answer. And before I tell the answer, think about that. How would you answer that question? If you were looking around a Chick-fil-A dining room, how would you know whose beverages you needed to refresh? Okay, so here is the answer. She said that the answer is, if you look around, if someone's drink is full, then they tend to grab the cup at the bottom of the cup because it's heavier and they need to support the weight. And if they've drunk about half of it or about two-thirds of it, they tend to grab it in the middle of the cup or higher up on the cup. And I don't know why, but it was just kind of like a beautifully specific and ultimately like worthless piece of information, but in the moment, cool. Because I looked around and everyone, it was consistent. Like everyone who had a full drink was grabbing it from the bottom. Everyone who had like halfway finished was grabbing it in the middle and up. And so I just thought that was cool. But anyways, we're going to jump into some stories at Chick-fil-A. So I'm about 2.5 weeks to 3 weeks into my time at Chick-fil-A. And in that time, you sort of learn everything that you need to know. My least favorite duty that I didn't do a whole lot after this incident was refilling all of the machines. So I had to refill the lemonade, I had to refill the sweet tea, I had to refill the iced tea, and I had to refill the Ice Dream machine. If you don't know, Chick-fil-A has Ice Dream, which is their ice cream. Again, they like using interesting terms for their stuff. And so the Ice Dream machine, dispenser machine, is very much like a soft serve machine that you'd see in like a buffet or something where you have the lever and there's three levers and there's like a canister on the top that you need to refill. And so the Ice Dream machine, though, was pretty tall. And to fill it, we had these like 15-pound jugs that you'd have to go into the back refrigerator to get. And then you have to like awkwardly shimmy it over, and it's pretty heavy, and you got to shimmy it over the machine while someone's working on it, right? Because it's super, super packed, and you can't just like stop using the machine while you're refilling it. And so I had to pull it out, lift the lid off of the canister, and put it in. And so the thing is, I'd done it a couple times successfully, but where I really sort of endangered myself was that there's a small ledge underneath where you actually dispense the soft serve. The small ledge could be used, I thought it could be used to press the jug against the machine and my chest as I take the canisters off the top before I lift the jug and fill the canisters with the Ice Dream mix. What I didn't think about is that the ledge was very, very shallow, and that if I let go of any pressure of my chest against the jug, that it would fall down facing away from me and create an Ice Dream bomb. And so that's exactly what happened on this day. It was a Saturday. It must have been like 2 or 3 o'clock. And at our Chick-fil-A, 2 to 3 o'clock is still very much rush hour for the lunch. And so there's lines out the door. We are blocking traffic. This was another thing about our Chick-fil-A. On any given day, we would do $35,000 of business. And we had to meet with the city hall, like the leaders of Bellevue, because we were backing up the interstate because people were actually queuing on the off-ramp of the interstate to come to our Chick-fil-A because our Chick-fil-A was just off of the 405 highway in Washington. And so it's an absolutely insane situation. And in that environment, I drop the jug. An absolute Ice Dream mix bomb goes off. It completely destroys my pants, soaks my socks, soaks my shoes. Everyone in the front of house area is caught in the crosshairs. I swear, I mean, because it hit the bottom and it was like a bottom bomb, it didn't hit anyone's shirt or anything, but almost everyone's shoes and everyone's pants got splattered. And it actually even hit a guest, which is the worst part, because if it just hit team members, then it could have been okay. But I hit a guest, and it was like a young middle school girl. And so I'm feeling really bad. Everything is sticky. I have to clean all this up while people are still working as hard as they can. Everyone's dark gray pants are now painted white. And you got to understand, there's no stopping the train when it's going. And so it's just sticky on the ground all day. And then as I'm closing shop, I am obviously put in charge of scrubbing all of the floors. And so a tough experience in my first couple weeks in the front of house, but I also had a tough experience in the kitchen. So I was hired as a front of house employee, which essentially means that I do everything that's client facing, dear Lord, consulting, that is customer facing. And so in the kitchen though, everyone that's front of house has to work 1 or 2 days in the kitchen to get an idea of what it's like to work back there so that when they're asking for things from the kitchen, they sort of have context and understand the process behind how long it takes certain things and just what sort of it's like to work in the kitchen. And so on this particular day, it must have been like a month into my career at Chick-fil-A, as it were, I was assigned to the kitchen and I was going to be working on fries. And I remember when I went back there and I put on my little apron and my little mask and all this kind of stuff and my hairnet, people were like kind of giggling at me and I didn't know why at the time. And I found out quickly. Working the fryer at our location was nothing short of torture. Imagine this. You're standing in front of two giant bubbling hot fryers. Behind you is a refrigerator with 40-pound bags of fries that you have to cut open and then drop between the two fry baskets so that you get 50-50, 50-50 in each of the baskets because that's how many they can hold. Then you have to set timers for how long they have to fry for. And then in front or immediately adjacent to those fry baskets is a huge canister where you throw the fried fries and then have to salt them with the correct amount of salt. Then you have to bag them into large, medium, and small boxes to be put onto the hotbed that the front of house employees can then grab for the orders. You look up and you can see all the orders on the screen. The red ones are the ones that have been waiting for a while. The yellow ones are the ones that need to go out. And the green ones are the ones that just came in. And so this is your setup. Now imagine that there is an order coming in every single 30 seconds. And so one fryer can hold about 8 large fries or about 12 medium fries. And 12 medium fries is nothing. Everyone, if you're averaging about 2 medium fries per order on the day, because you got some people who don't want fries, and then you got the people who order 8 large fries and absolutely destroy your willpower. So you have that. And so basically the entire day, you're playing this game of, you know, that typing game that you played when you were learning how to type, or like, you know, you're a space ranger and there's aliens coming at you and you have to type in a word and then press space. And then as you like correctly type the word and press space, then it kills the alien, then they disappear, but they keep like coming in waves and you gotta, you know, get rid of them as fast as you can. It's kind of like that game. But like if there were like 1,000 aliens coming at you for 6 hours straight with no pauses and your fingers, instead of getting numb, are getting burned by peanut oil. And so it was an exceptionally tough day. I was getting burned. I was behind. I was getting yelled at by the front of house employees. And there was a point in which I thought I was getting a groove and I was like, okay, I'm getting this. And then this came in. Someone asked for a medium well-done fry. Something that food service employees won't tell you to your face, but we all understand, is that we absolutely despise people who ask for adjustments on the food. Here's why. We have an assembly line that is set to make a certain amount of food that'll get us through the rush period. If you make an adjustment, then it throws off the entire system. And I understand if you need a dietary restriction, then I get it. But I was doing well on the fryer, and then all of a sudden I get a well-done fry. A well-done fry is this. If someone asked for a well-done fry, so in this case, they had asked for a small well-done fry. What I have to do is take a small container of fries that I've already put in sort of the hot plate, put it back into a fryer by itself, because you can't double fry the fries with other fries, because then you have to pan them, you have to take them out, and you can't sift through which ones are double fried and normal fried. And the thing about like the franchises, they're super strict about like their ideal frying time for their fries so that people are getting the consistent experience across their stores. And so you can't change this. And so instead of me having one fryer available to make 8 large fries worth of fries, I have to throw this tiny little small package of fries into the fryer for like a minute and a half to double fry it for this person who's now holding up the dry for the line. And then on top of that, now I have to separate the bags, because what you do is you pour it in between the baskets and then they separate, right? But if one's taken, then I have to pour half of, or what I think is half, into one fryer, and now all my time's off. So I take the well-done fry, the small well-done fry, out of the thing, probably burn myself, put it back into the small packet, put it there, front of house employee, gives it to the lovely customer, and then I go back, and I now have half of the bag on the floor. I quickly throw that into the fryer, but all the timing's off now. And so now you have to use 2 separate timers instead of just using 1 timer for both your fries. Anyways, it might seem trivial, but this day, more than any other day at Chick-fil-A, taught me so much about how difficult it is to work in food service, and particularly in the kitchen in food service, and particularly in the kitchen in food service for a fast casual or fast food restaurant. It gave me another level of respect for these people. It's a thankless job, and they are feeding so many people. It might not be the most nutritious food, but they are feeding so many people and not getting any sort of appreciation. And so it really opened my eyes to that fact, because I was getting destroyed. And so 2 quite tough experiences sort of in the beginning of my career at Chick-fil-A. But what followed was a beautiful blossoming of a very, very capable Chick-fil-A employee. I was training people on the IPOS system that we used outside to get cars' orders before they got to the drive-thru window. My pleasure was now in my body. If someone said thank you to me outside of Chick-fil-A, I would like say my pleasure on accident. And all the terminology was just in my head. And I had everything down. I memorized how much something would cost based on all the adjustments that someone would make. And I had my headset voice down. You've probably been wondering where that "It's a Wonderful Day Here in San Francisco" comes from. It comes from that well-oiled Mark So Chick-fil-A employee experience, where when I was on the headset, I would always say, "It's a wonderful day here at Chick-fil-A. My name is Mark. How may I serve you today? And a drink with that? Any sauces? All right, well, perfect. Your total will be blank, 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 and it'll be my pleasure to serve you at the window." My pleasure. Emphasis on the double "my pleasure." It's a little stale right now, but back then I'm telling you, my pleasure was buttery. It was low. It was at the bottom of my register, and it made people really feel like I was really, really happy when they said thank you. And so I'm killing it. I'm feeling good about myself as a Chick-fil-A employee. And then one day, my Chick-fil-A character was put to the test, and I failed miserably. A semi-regular occurrence for our Chick-fil-A was that the Seahawks would come and drop by, because like I said, it was the only one in the Pacific Northwest. So after practice or before games or something, they would order these huge orders of Chick-fil-A. And for the opening, even though I wasn't there, Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas, 2 prominent members of the Seahawks at the time, came to support the opening and to get some free food. And so I had a couple famous encounters. So The biggest one was with Sierra. She was coming to purchase food for what I assume was Russell Wilson coming home from practice, because she'd get the same order every time, and it was a ton of food. I remember it being a really, really interesting order because it was around $50, but they would get like six of every sauce. And so I remember I'd look at the order and be like, oh my gosh, who's that obnoxious customer? And then they'd roll up in their like Cadillac or something, and it was Sierra. I don't know, Sierra. And she was in person, I'm telling you, one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my entire life. So we're all fawning, going crazy. But anyways, the experience I want to talk about is about a Seahawk who came into the store when I was working at the register, and he happened to come to my register. So the Seahawk in question, his name was Thomas Rawls. He was a running back for the Seahawks in 2015, and everyone loved him because he ran downhill. He just like loved contact, and he was a really, really hard runner. And so people loved him. And so he'd gotten hurt in the season, and he came to our Chick-fil-A. And so I'm working the register that day, and I look in the line, and I immediately see Thomas Rawls. And he's like 5'9", 5'8 and a half in person. So I can tell the people in the line are sort of missing out that they're next to an NFL player, but I instantly see him. And my coworker and I, we kind of our eyes meet, and I can tell that he also knows. And so we're playing the strategic game of, you know, going fast and then going slow with certain people so that we will get Thomas Rawls in our line. Right? Because Thomas Rawls is feeding through the line. When he gets to the front, we both have customers, and we both sort of start the transaction at around the same time because we've set it up that way. And so we're both trying to speed through the transaction. I'm like, oh yeah, what do you want? Yep. Okay. Yeah. Any sauces? Anything to drink? Okay. No, you're good. No, it'll come out. Yep. Okay. Yep. Just go to the line. Okay, great. Nope. Be quiet. Thank you. All right, go. And long story short, I win. My coworker's sad. Thomas Rawls comes to me, and he places his order. He gets a spicy deluxe meal, and he gets Chick-fil-A strips. And he's like looking for sauces, and I'm like, oh, any sauces? And he's like, because it's kind of confusing. I even when I go to Chick-fil-A's nowadays, I'm like, I feel pressured when they ask me that. So I'm like, you know what, man, I'll get you one of each. And he's like instantly like, oh wow, thank you so much. And at this point, I'm not letting on that I know who he is, because you know, you got to play it cool. And so there's a part in the transaction where we're supposed to ask for their name so that when we get the food, we can bring it out and give them their food and call their name, whatever. And so the place where I show that I know who he is because instead of asking, I go, so Thomas, and I type it into my computer, and I'm just looking all cool. And he's like, oh yeah, man, nice to meet you. And he can tell I now know who he is. And I can tell, like, I think he was a little offended that he was in the line and literally no one knew who he was. Not offended, but, like, a little sad. And so he looked happy that I had recognized him. So I'm like, oh, I got you. And so the transaction's ending, and he looks at me and he goes, hey, I have a really important meeting back at the training center, and I got to go quickly. How long do you think this is going to take? And I was like, oh, as I look over at the crowd of people who have been waiting for their food for 20 minutes, glaring at all of us, I'm like, oh, it should only be like 5-10 minutes. He's like, oh, great, man, great. That's perfect. I'm going to go wait in the line. Thank you. I'm like, okay, great. So now Thomas goes, enjoys that crowd of people. They look like vultures looking at, waiting for their prey to die. But they're all staring at us. And I've now got an NFL player and a crowd of people behind him staring at not just me. They're mostly staring at the person packing the food because that's the person who's actually getting their food out. But they're also sort of staring at my team. And so I look over and Thomas Rawls is just like smiling at me. And this is an NFL player smiling at you. And so it's a certain level of pressure. And so I make an excuse. I'm like, oh, I need to go on my break. I get someone to cover for me on the register. I run to the back of the kitchen, and I had a friend back there. His name was Kevin. I go, Kevin, Thomas Rawls is here, man. He's like, no freaking way. Like, where is he? And I'm like, he comes out and he looks through like the little window in the slidey door, and he sees him in the line. He's like, oh my gosh, no way. I'm like, yeah, I told him he'd get his food in 5 minutes. And he's like, what are you talking about? We're like 22 minutes behind on all the orders. And I was like, you got to do something for me, man. And because he ordered a spicy deluxe sandwich, a fry, and some Chick-fil-A strips. And he's like, all right, well, I'll see what I can do. And so he goes back and he starts frying up some Chick-fil-A strips. He'd already had some going, but they'd already been bagged for the other orders. And those other orders were waiting on other items to finish to be able to go out to the customer, right? So they're not done yet. So we have like 6 or 7 bags lined up that are just waiting on sandwiches or fries or, you know, nuggets or something. And so he is working on the Chick-fil-A strips, and I was like, I'll figure out the spicy deluxe, because there's no way that we can get a spicy deluxe sandwich out in 5 to 10 minutes. And so I'm technically on my break. I am on your break. You have to like order food and like eat or whatever, right? But instead of doing that, and Thomas Rawls doesn't know that I'm on break now. He just sees me like slip away from the register, and he's probably just like, he's putting together my order. And so I step back to the front, and Thomas Rawls is still smiling at me. I like saunter over to where the person's bagging the food, and I can tell that it's going to be like 20 to 25 minutes before we get the spicy deluxe sandwich that we need for Thomas Rawls' order. And so I'm looking through the grates. I can see Kevin. Kevin's working on the strips, and I'm like, it just has to be done. And so I look down, and I see a bag that has 2 spicy deluxe sandwiches in it. And in a moment of craziness, in the moment of one of the most, not like, it's not like peer pressure, but I felt such pressure to be cool in that moment. I had an NFL player waiting to be fed by me, not directly by me, but I was the facilitator for his nutrition. And so I looking at Kevin. Kevin's getting the strips done, and I'm like, it has to be done. So I grab one of the spicy deluxe sandwiches out of the bag, and I'm just real quiet with it. And I take another bag. I quickly sneak it in there, and the fries are also taking a really long time. So I take a fry out of another bag, and I put it into the bag. Kevin passes me the strips through the grate. I grab it. And it's maybe been like 4 or 5 minutes at this point. And so Thomas is like smiling at me still. So I walk over, and it looks like I'm going to like, you know, go on my lunch or whatever. I like walk up to him. I silently pass him the bag. I'm like, go have a good meeting or something. And he looks at my name tag, and he can tell what I've done, right? Like, there's no way he doesn't know that I've just committed some sort of Chick-fil-A crime, because there's like 15 people behind him that he's just, you know, jumped in line. And so he looks at my name tag and goes, oh wow, thank you, Mark. And he says my name. I'm like, you know what, it was all worth it, this is dope. He leaves. I go back to the bagging person, and I was close to this person, so I was like, hey, by the way, I stole your spicy deluxe in that order and a fry in that order, so good luck, I'm gonna go on my break now. And I just walked away. And so a short story of my moral failure at Chick-fil-A, but who knows? He might have been going to a super important meeting to you know, sign a new contract. He needed to be well fed so he could think through the contract terms and, you know, how many more people are we making happy if Thomas Rawls is signed for the Seahawks, you know, than the people in line at Chick-fil-A. And so these are all just excuses I made to justify it in my head. But yeah, just a short little story that concludes my stories on Chick-fil-A.
Niemand uns in God, not on a God's new gun guy, Sarang Baketerka.
We are going in on the emotional Korean playlist today, but we're going to jump right into my second retail experience, which was at the Apple Store. My senior year of college, I was living off campus for my senior year, and I needed to pay rent. After finding out that my internship for the summer after my junior year was paying much less than I thought, I needed to get a job for the fall quarter of my senior year in order to pay rent for the rest of the year. And so I'm finishing up my internship, and I apply online like near the end of August for this specialist position at the Apple Store, which is basically just like a general team member who like sells products and whatever and answers questions. And so I hear back like a week later, I get an interview, I go in, kill the interview, use all of my Chick-fil-A experience ever for like every single question because they love that stuff. It's similar, like service-oriented cultures. And so I get the job. And so literally like I end my internship on a Friday, and on the Monday I'm at the Apple headquarters in Cupertino training. And that was pretty unique to our location. I worked at the San Jose Valley Fair location. And so because we were so close to the headquarters, instead of training at our store, we just trained at the headquarters, which was pretty cool. And so after finishing training, we go in and I go directly to what I wanted to get to, the discount directory. Apple has obviously has insane partnerships and discounts. And so I spent like, I want to say like a quarter of my first day literally just like doing my research. How could I squeeze the most discounts and savings out of my time at the Apple Store? I knew I wasn't going to be working there for very long. They asked me that when I started, and I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, you know, I'm doing this while I'm in school. But I actually had a number that I needed to hit, and as soon as I hit that number, I was going to leave. So I had that numbers goal, but it quickly shifted into a target date to leave the company when I learned of a particular discount. After you've worked at Apple for more than 3 months, you get access to a discount, which is $500 off of a phone or $500 off of a MacBook. And it's used once every single 3 years. So after you've used it, after 3 months at the firm, you have to wait 3 years to then get that same discount. And so I learned of this thing. And I was doing the math. I did the quick math, and using the personal discounts that you get on devices every year, which is 25%, I was like, I can get an iPhone XS, which is a retail value of $1,000 for $250. And I was rocking a 6S at this point, and so to go to a XS was an unthinkable leap in technology. I couldn't even dream of an iPhone XS. I was like drooling over an iPhone 8 because I was having so many performance issues with my 6S. And so the idea of jumping three generations was just insane to me. And so all of a sudden, I see this window and I calculate it out. If I place in my order sort of near the end of December, which is, you know, when that discount will first be available for me, and then put in my 2 weeks, like the week after that, I'll be done, sort of like beginning of January when I come back to school, and then I'll just start the winter quarter fresh. I have all the money I need for rent, and I'll be good to go. And so that's exactly what I did. I put in my 2 weeks. I put in my order for the iPhone. I came back, picked it up, said goodbye to everyone, started my winter quarter senior year with no job and all the free time in the world, and I'm still rocking my XS today. So yeah, I absolutely finessed the system, but let's jump into some stories that I have while working at the Apple Store. All right, so the first story is not very chronological, but it speaks to something that was a very, very unique experience that I'd never really felt before, and that is having access to the Apple Store discounts. Like I was talking about, I did my research on the discounts, right? But what I didn't think about was how my relationships and my conversations were going to change with the people around me as we approached the holiday season. When I was younger and I found out someone worked at the Apple Store or like Microsoft or Disney, I would be like, oh my gosh, how do I get close to that person or their parent in order to one day confidently and unashamedly ask for Disneyland tickets or a discount or something like that. Because that is, for me, that is like the gold standard of friendship. If you can unashamedly ask for a discount from someone, you are really, really, really close. And when I worked at Apple and we approached the holiday season, I could start to feel the change in my relationships. I could feel people sort of tense up around me as they prepared discussion. What is the word? As they prepared discussion barriers, such that we would bounce off the barriers and land at me offering a discount to them. It'd be stuff like, "Oh, like what are you doing for the holidays? Oh, like how does Christmas work at your house? Oh, okay, so you guys like buy gifts for like one person in your family? Oh, cool. I buy gifts for like five people in my family. It's like really expensive. Oh yeah, it's so expensive, dude. Oh yeah, you know, I was actually looking to get like everyone AirPods this year. oh my gosh, you work at the Apple store? Could you get me a discount? That's usually how it would go. And a lot of them would be more natural. Some people would play the long game, you know, where they'd have multiple conversations with me and they'd, you know, they'd sprinkle it in. They're like, oh, dude, you work at the Apple store? And then the next time they'd be like, oh, how's the Apple store? And the next time it'd be like, oh, what kind of discount do you guys get? And then the next time they would just come out and be like, yo, can I get a discount? And this this change in my relationships and the conversations I was having, it was so interesting. Like at Thanksgiving with my extended family, I consider myself decently close to my extended family, but there are some people that I don't really talk to that much. But this Thanksgiving, I was an absolute hit. Everyone seemed to know that I worked at the Apple store, and conversely, everyone seemed to want to talk to me, because at Thanksgiving, what we do is we take a hat, we throw names in, and then everyone has to draw one name, and you buy just one present for the person whose name is on that slip. It's just a really, really simple system. It's like a secret Santa, and it saves a lot of people a lot of money, and so you can get one big gift for someone. But because of that, everyone's minds at Thanksgiving are kind of set on what am I going to get for everyone during Christmas. And so, yeah, I don't know. I was just a very popular guy at Thanksgiving. I've always been sort of one of the younger ones in the family, and so I finally felt like I had a seat at the table. Just took working at the Apple store. But yeah, this story is largely, you know, it's not linear. There's no sort of end or beginning, but it was just a switch. It was just a very interesting and subtle shift in my relationships and the conversations I was having that still last to this day. You know, at my new job, I was working on a project where someone found out that I worked at the Apple store, and they're like, oh, do you still know people there who can get you discounts? And me having fallen out of that, you know, that pedestal of having access to those discounts, which I'd actually started to miss because it feels good to get discounts for people that you care about and that you like. And so not being able to do that anymore, I kind of spoke out of turn and was like, oh yeah, I have friends at the Apple store. I can get you discount, whatever. And they're like, oh, cool. Can you get me an AirPod then? Like one of the new AirPod Pros. And then someone else on our project heard that I had offered that to this coworker. And so she also asked me. And so now I had two people checking up on me like every week to see if I was going to get that discount for them. And I'm not going to lie. You can probably tell by how quickly I left the Apple store. I didn't create the most meaningful and deep relationships there. And so I didn't have anyone I could have called up. I was completely bluffing. And so I kind of strung them along and I was like, oh yeah, well, you know, they have limited discounts on, you know, certain items, but like I'm still reaching out to them, so I'll let you know. And then I thought they would just forget about it. And then like a month later, the first person who asked me got back to me on our Microsoft Teams, whatever. And she was like, hey, just want to check in about those AirPod Pros. Like I've been seeing ads for them and I'm really excited. And I had to be like, oh man, you know what? I asked her, but you know, I forgot to tell you that she said that, you know, she doesn't do discounts for friends of friends because, you know, then it just gets too out of, you know, it gets just crazy. And, you know, I've experienced this before where like friends of friends are asking me and it gets crazy. And she's like, oh, I understand. So the power that that has is something that at once felt very good, but also felt very bad. And so if you've never experienced that before, there's a little taste there of what the access to those sort of discounts feels like. But yeah, so to jump into our next story, this one is much more impactful, I would say. Not impactful, more grounded, more linear. It was a single day at the Apple store, and we had some interesting customers roll through. The thing about Apple is that everyone who owns an Apple device, because they've had Apple devices for so long, they feel like they are Apple's most important customer. Like they come into the Apple store and it's like they expect the best customer service possible. I, of course, want to provide the best customer service possible, but it's like every single person who owns an iPhone expects Apple to treat them like they are their number one customer. And so we had people come in with stuff very tangentially related to the Apple store that they would feel entitled to come and talk to us about. Here's the example. So one day I was just working, I was doing my thing. I was probably trying to avoid people on the sidelines, you know, cleaning iPhones and trying to look unapproachable. And this older Russian woman comes up to me. I know she's Russian because she started out like, "Does anyone here speak Russian?" And I said, "I don't think so." And she's like, "All right, well, then you'll do." And I was like, "So what can I help you with today?" And she promptly pulls her backpack off from her back, plops it onto the table, and pulls out this like giant Dell massive like dinosaur laptop. It must have been like 15 years old or something. And so she opens this thing up, and what she's showing me is her AT&T service bill for her her talk, text, web, and internet. So it's internet, her talk, and her text. She had it all done through AT&T. And so then she started going into this long story, and she told me that everyone in her family didn't believe her. So she started off with that, and I was like, okay, well, where is this going? And she goes, she looks at my name tag. She goes, "Hey, Mark, wait, did I have a name tag? No, I don't think I had a name tag. Sorry, I'm getting Chick-fil-A and Apple Store mixed up." I had said my name already, and she goes, "Mark," and she's a heavy accent. I'm not going to try to do it. But basically what she's saying is, "Mark, for the last couple months, I've been experiencing something where I'll be on my desktop or I'll be on this laptop, and all of a sudden, the mouse will just start moving on its own and just start clicking random things and typing random things into my Google, and then whenever I try to show one of my kids, it stops." And I was like, "What are you talking about? How is this related to the Apple Store, ma'am?" And she was like, she just completely ignored me and just kept going. She's like, "Yeah, whenever I try to show anyone, it stops. I'm not being paranoid. No one believes me, not my husband, not my kids, not my grandkids. And I've tried to show everyone and they just do not trust me." And so I'm looking around like, okay, I gotta sell. But you know what? You're really nice, and let's see what we can do. So we start going deep into her story, and she's talking about like, "I think it's coming through the wires, and I'm convinced I've got Chinese hackers on my computer, or maybe Russian hackers because I'm Russian and, you know, came to the country like less than 5 years ago. So like maybe they're tracking me." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy stuff." And so basically what happens and transpires over the next 2 hours, and the thing is, communicating with her is taking a very long time because she doesn't have great English, but I'm very patient with people who don't speak great English. And so we're getting through the conversation, but she's really piecing this story for me little by little. It is like, I would describe it like I was watching like a mini series that I didn't understand the full language of, but it was coming at me in bits and keywords, and there were cliffhangers because she would be like, "And then screen shake." I'd be like, "Whoa, what does that mean?" She'd be like, "And then mouse click and type, 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 and then shake." I was like, "What? What is going on?" And so this continued, and this was how we were conversing back and forth. But basically, I got the gist of the story, how just everyone thought she was this paranoid Russian grandma and that she was convinced that someone was hacking her computer. And so what we did was I got on the phone with her AT&T customer service representative. I canceled all of her talks, text, and web. And then we started an account with Xfinity for all of her home service. And the AT&T person advised her to like throw away all her cables and everything and just start fresh. And so we like took notes down on this piece of paper that I wrote down all of the notes that she needed to do when she go home. She needed like pull out the cables, throw those away, take the AT&T ones that she gets, or the Xfinity ones that she gets, install those, and then she'd be good to go. But because she didn't speak great English and no one believed her and no one wanted to go through the hassle of doing all this, I sat with this woman and basically like, so, you know, I'd be on the phone with AT&T and the Xfinity representatives and be like, "How are you related to this woman?" And I'd be like, "Oh, she is just someone I've known for a long time. And so I help her out because she doesn't know English very well. And they'd be like, oh, okay. And I wouldn't really ask any more questions. But I was literally just an Apple Store employee who'd met this woman like an hour and a half before. But yeah, we basically walked through all of that. She signed whatever online contract that she needed for Xfinity. She got the service and then she gave me a big hug and she left. And I am not sure that she had a single Apple product. You know what I was talking about, like people coming into the store and feeling like they were the number one customer. Maybe she had like a pair of AirPods or something, but I'm pretty sure she had an Android and she definitely didn't have an Apple Watch and the computer was a Dell. So she had to have just like AirPods or like iTunes or something, but she felt fully comfortable coming into the Apple Store and asking for all of her tech help. But yeah, just a story that I feel like encapsulates the kind of ridiculous but kind of sweet interactions you have as an Apple Store employee, where people come in with their life problems and you're fully incentivized to help them because you have no sales quota. Like there's no, there are no, what's the word? Incentives for selling a lot. And so you can literally spend 2 hours with a Russian grandma helping her get her, you know, broadband internet changed and you won't get docked any points. But it's good if they leave you a like a review. But just because she didn't speak English very well, I don't think that that was going to happen. But still one of those crazy stories that I like to tell people because I think it captures what it was like to work there. It was an absolutely chaotic mess a lot of the time. And so I want to end in just sharing a thought that I had as I was reflecting on my time at Chick-fil-A and the Apple Store, which is that the vast, vast majority of the people I worked with were amazing. They were excellent, excellent people. They worked so hard. They came in every single day with such optimism, such joy, such positivity, such commitment to creating great customer service, and they never complained. They made the best of their situation. At Chick-fil-A, we had this one worker named Kayla who were on a particularly stressful day. She would just like start belting along to the instrumental background music at Chick-fil-A. And then we would all just sort of join in. And then it really helped like relieve the stress, not only of the people in the kitchen and the front of house, but also the people in the line who are like pushing to get their chicken sandwiches. At the Apple Store, you know, as we were closing, we'd close the glass doors. We would connect every, you know, HomePod and speaker in the store imaginable and then just blast and blare music as people are like breakdancing in the aisles and like dancing on top of the tables, just trying to create, you know, just a fun, positive atmosphere. And I guess I just wanted to highlight that fact that people who work in food service and retail and service-oriented positions, they're largely looked down upon. But these are some of the hardest jobs in the world. You deal with the most heinous personalities. You deal with people who come into the store thinking that they own the place, wanting to feel big, and you have to match that with a level of patience and optimism and commitment to customer service that the vast majority of people could not handle. The job is not for everyone, but I do think that everyone should have to go that through that experience because you learn so much about patience and humility and just what it takes to actually provide great customer service. And so, yeah, I just wanted to end with that. A tip of the cap to all the people that I used to work with and to all food service and retail workers out there. And so with that, we're going to wrap up episode 5 of Musings with Mark So. I apologize that this took so long to get out. I took the break, and it's hard to get the momentum back going for creative projects like this, but I will try my darndest to get recorded the ideas that I have on this Google Doc. And yeah, with that, we're going to end with a quote from Doodles, the mascot of Chick-fil-A. I got that from my quick Google search, didn't know that myself, which is, of course, eat more chicken. And so with those wise words, I'm going to sign off for myself at the Musings with Mark So podcast. Thank you so much for listening in. Stay tuned for more. There will be more, I promise. And I hope you have an amazing week. Musings on Musings with Mark So. The first thought that I had is that in the spirit of making this an episode where I'm just hurling random Korean content at you, I finished a show on Netflix called My Mister about a month ago. It is in my top five favorite shows of all time. If you're looking for something new and something very, very human amidst all of everything that's going on right now, I highly, highly recommend the show. It is so good that I took a Musings on Musings with Mark So slot just to tell you about it. So you know it must be good. The second thought that I had is going to somewhat contradict something that I said earlier in the episode, but I thought it was important to tell you, the listener, so here goes. One of the privileges of working at Chick-fil-A is that one day you can decide near the end of your shift that you really want to try a hot, from the fryer, freshly fried spicy chicken sandwich. And so you slither on back to the kitchen, you look at your friend Kevin, you give him the nod, he pops in a spicy chicken fillet without anyone seeing before he closes down the fryers, you grab two buns, you put two pickles on one of them, you walk on over, he grabs the sizzling hot spicy chicken fillet out of the fryer, he drops it on the bun, and then within 5 seconds of it being out of the fryer, you burn your mouth, but you bite into the most heavenly Chick-fil-A spicy chicken sandwich that you've ever had that changes your opinion on how good they can be, but it also shows you that the half-life of spicy chicken sandwiches, and chicken sandwiches for that matter, is so short. So what I'm trying to indirectly tell you that I don't really want to tell you is that if you go to Chick-fil-A and you get a spicy chicken or a regular chicken sandwich, you should ask for well done. It will be so much better. And I hate that I'm saying that because I know what it does to the kitchen, but there is no way that there is a Chick-fil-A out there that you're going to that is busier than the one that I worked at. So if you're willing to face the ire of the Chick-fil-A workers, ask for a well-done chicken sandwich and it will make for a much, much more enjoyable experience. And with that, that is the end of Musings on Musings with Mark So. I will catch you on the next one.